Welcome back, everyone. I brought Grayson with me this time. Grayson and I both saw this video, and perhaps you did too, from Capturing Christianity. His name is Cameron something, right?
Cameron Bertuzzi.
Okay. I'm not going to remember that, but I can remember Cameron. So this is his video on why atheism is silly. He came out with a video not that long ago called something to the effect of why I'm no longer taking atheism seriously or something like that. I didn't watch that video. Was that the group live stream that he did?
No, that was a shorter video. I tried to watch it when it first came out. I was curious. I was like, for some reason, I was curious about why Cameron Bertuzzi is no longer taking atheism seriously. I don't know. It made me click on it. I watched like the first couple seconds and then very quickly concluded that Cameron is not to be taken seriously himself.
Yeah, I'm going to try to take off my asshole hat, which I am usually wearing today, and because I don't know Cameron and I don't know a lot of Cameron's other work. And so I just want to focus on what I think is wrong and not necessarily attacking Cameron or anything like that. Because he seems like a cool dude. He's definitely knowledgeable of stuff. But I think that this is such a blunder and just not a serious video. And we had to go over it. So the way Cameron arrived at the position that atheism is silly is by doing some bastardized Bayesian reasoning. And we will be going over that here, but I wanted to highlight, I ended up seeing this video pretty early, and after listening to the first couple minutes, I saw what was going on, and I left some comments on here. So I just want to sort of front load essentially what my issues were with this, and Grayson has also seen this video, and it sounds like, although we didn't really plan this strategically or anything, we didn't write a script, we didn't brainstorm that, I don't even know what he's going to say, and he doesn't know what I'm going to say, but we did figure out that we had the same general criticism of this. So what I wrote was, you know, a God of infinite capabilities, or a God has infinite abilities, but if I arbitrarily assign probabilities while assuming those God's intentions, then it becomes super duper more likely. And what you're going to see is, under the presumption of naturalism, Cameron just simply says, well, that's the most improbable thing imaginable. And some other people were asking basically what I meant by that. And the problem, again, with the way Cameron goes about this, from what I saw, is you can use priors to do Bayesian, I'm just going to read my comments here. You can use priors to do Bayesian reasoning. The question is, how on earth do you arrive at, for example, he gives the probability under theism 50% a lot of the time. So how do you get 50% under theism with a being with an infinite number of different desires, abilities, and potentials? And then but then for naturalism, you say, well, it's 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10 million. He does like 1 in 1 trillion at some point in this video. It's complete arbitration. Theism is more likely, and Cameron proves it by assigning theism higher probabilities in these hypotheticals. It's like when SEC guys talk about the college football playoff, and they say, if this SEC team would have gone in, they'd have won every game. God is undefeated in hypotheticals, and so is the SEC. So,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with using Bayesian reasoning for an argument. It's like statistically, mathematically sound, logically sound reasoning. But the issue is that for it to be sound, the probabilities that you assign to the various propositions should be rooted in some kind of verifiable reality, not just based on your feelings. And my issue with, it's not just with Cameron, I don't want to single him out because I've seen other Christian apologists using sort of Bayesian style arguments, and every single time, so far without exception, it's always just like, well, here's my argument, and I feel like I made a really good argument, so I'm going to put my probability of about 95%, and then the counter arguments to mine, I don't feel like they're very good. So those have a probability of 1 in 1,000,000. And it's just literally going on your fees. That's it.
Yeah, I basically agree.
But I just want to also just say before we start that he is going to be going through like three arguments, and like we can deal with those arguments, and we can talk about, you know, holes or flaws in them, or we can deconstruct his actual arguments substantively. And I'm looking forward to doing that. But like, yeah, then he just is going to assign them probabilities, and there's nothing that we can really do about that other than like maybe it could be fun for us to play along and for us to come up with our own probabilities for his various propositions and see what we get at the end of it.
Maybe. I don't plan on doing any arithmetic, and I don't have a program. Unlike Cameron, he wrote the program, so that's pretty cool of him. But
he's selling it now. How cool is that?
Oh, yeah. Well, can't let that go to waste. All right, let's listen to what his three basic arguments are.
Theism we're going to cover in this video. So number one, the universe is orderly. Number two, the universe is fine-tuned for life. Number three, there is consciousness. After we work through these three pieces of evidence for theism, then we'll introduce the problem of evil, the argument that atheists love to bring up, and we'll see how it impacts the overall situation. All right.
So I haven't seen the part of the video where he actually goes over the problem of evil. And I was just thinking now, I was like, it's kind of weird how he does all the fine-tuning stuff as if those are arguments against naturalism, but never tries to change the odds for theism due to the problem of evil or anything. But if he does that at the end, then good for him. So, point Cameron.
Well, he does it at the end, but in a very, shall we say, biased and inconsistent way. I don't think that that's spoiling anything, because I think that everyone probably would expect as much from a Christian apologist at this point.
It's not going to be something like, well, God would desire us to have free will, so we would expect evil to happen, so it doesn't really change the odds at all.
No, he is okay. Going to actually plug in and change the final odds, and we'll discuss it when we get there, but it's not exactly convincing, I'd say, as an atheist.
Okay.
Let's start with our first piece of evidence, order. When I talk about order, what I mean is that all objects in the universe are subject to the same laws everywhere and at all times. So, no matter where you are, if you're on Earth, the edge of the galaxy, or the farthest reaches of the universe. So, for example, if you're in the Star Wars universe, part of the galaxy.
Didn't he say this is a separate argument, then fine-tuning?
Yep. The way that he's trying to lay it out, at least, is...
Because didn't he say order, fine-tuning, and consciousness were his three? But order is fine-tuning.
The way that he's trying to describe it is basically he shouldn't be saying the word order. What he really means to say is uniformitarity. Like, why are the laws of the universe and the constants so uniform? Why don't they vary? That's what he actually means by order.
Okay. I guess, okay, that is different. Okay, good point.
Everything behaves in exactly the same way, with the same powers and the same liabilities. So gravity pulls with the same force, light travels at the same speed no matter where you are in the universe, and electrons all have the same charge. It's like every clock in the universe is perfectly synchronized, ticking away in harmony without any communication between them. This universal consistency throughout the universe is actually astonishing. It's not exactly something that we would just expect to find.
Well, actually, it is for a lot of different reasons. Do you want to go first?
Maybe I have a slightly different take, because I just have no idea how Cameron is forming a basis to form any kind of expectation about this. So I want to hear your take on it first.
Well, so he's kind of putting the cart before the horse by claiming that in this universe we exist in, the laws are the same everywhere. We don't know that. Now, we have successfully landed on locally, we know for certain that this is real. And in the observable universe, it's almost certainly the case, because we knew the mass of Mars, and we calculated exactly what our, you know, Mars landers would have to do, exert this much energy, have a parachute this big, have balloons this big or whatever, to land safely on there. And we did, even though that's literally a different planet, you know? But we don't know outside this observable universe if that holds true. And this is this is one of the concepts of multiverse. I think it's the bubble universe idea where what's really weird about I think it's the bubble universe idea. If I'm wrong, please grill me about this in the comments. But one of our concepts of multiverse doesn't mean that there are multiple parallel universes. It means that space is infinite and there are different pockets of the universe where the constants are different. So this is also, this is why it's weird, because it's like he's arguing fine-tuning and order at the same time, because multiverse would essentially be able to deal with both of these issues.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that is the bubble universe, and he will kind of just try to hand wave away multiverse, like, for no apparent reason. But yeah, I think even if I were to, like, if I was to be told all the laws of physics, all the things that apply in this room that I'm in right now, and then somebody had asked me, well, do you expect for those to apply somewhere else? I would say, you know, I don't really know if they should or they shouldn't. I don't have any reason to think that they should if I'm limited to my room. And I don't really have any reason to think that they shouldn't, because I would need a reason to think why they should be different, right? So, like, to me, when I hear this, I just have to ask Cameron, like, why do you have such an expectation in the first place? He said, if there's no God, I wouldn't expect for things to be, like, the laws of physics to be uniform. I'm like, why, though? He never even attempts to explain why he would expect that, or what basis he forms that expectation from. So, me, I just don't think I could make an expectation, because, like, on what basis could I do so?
It, what I think I'm seeing here is that he takes the intuitive position, which I think there's nothing wrong with, that this universe could have been any kind of universe. And again, there's really nothing wrong with that. What are the odds that the universe happens to be exactly the way it is? That is intuitively very appealing, and it's kind of hard to reckon with. But what he doesn't do is take into account the thing I sort of already discussed, is theism. It's kind of like he's doing what people that do Pascal's wager do. They say, well, if atheism is true, there's no hell. If theism is true, there is hell. But what they really mean is the specific theism they believe in. So they're making it dichotomous, when it's not. There's an infinite number of kinds of hells there could be, where being a certain type of theist doesn't, well, still lands you in hell, just as an atheist does. And so when he argues, my cat just did a big stretch. When he argues naturalism has so many absurd possibilities, how did we end up, you know, with this universe we have right now? So does theism, because you're not giving us something less complex, more parsimonious by just asserting theism. You're giving us infinite potentials again, just a different from a different source.
I mean, yeah, that's absolutely fair. He's making a lot of underlying assumptions here that I don't even think he's being honest to himself about some of the assumptions that he's making here. Because, yeah, you've brought up numerous examples, from the bubble universe to more traditional multiverses to, like, even just, like, saying, well, hey, maybe there are reasons why the universe is the way that it is and is uniform with these laws and these constants and stuff. And is like that in everywhere we look. Maybe there are very good reasons for that, and we just don't know what those are. And then Cameron wants to take it a step further and say, well, it has to be my reasons, even though you're right. There are all of these other potential options that are, I would say, a lot more logical and reasonable than Cameron's explanation for these things, but Cameron's not willing to consider those. It's his way or the highway. It's a false dichotomy, just like you said.
Well, I mean, I think he just doesn't think about them. Like, they don't really spring to mind when he thinks about these things. But anyway, let's not belabor one small point too long.
By chance. So why does everything follow the same rules? Why do those rules apply everywhere and at all times? Science, for all its magnificent power, doesn't answer this question. It doesn't answer it at all. Science assumes...
Well, science is descriptive, not prescriptive. So... I mean, you can say, like, in science, we can answer why questions, but they're not, like, value judgments or anything like that. I mean, it's kind of like he's saying, yes, under theism, it happened and it was supposed to happen in a way. I get a waft of that kind of teleology from it. And it's like, well, just forget that there is any and consider that inevitably, naturalistically, this could happen. Take like an anthropic principle position or something like that. I don't know. I might be being unfair there.
Rewind that a second.
Okay.
Follow the same rules. Why do those rules apply everywhere and at all times? Science for all its magnificent power.
You got it?
Yeah, yeah. So he's being ambiguous with his language here into trying to imply that science can't ever even possibly say anything about this uniformitarity. But he says, oh, science doesn't say anything about it. So he's being kind of ambiguous here to imply that science can't. But like, in principle, science could one day find a explanation for why the laws of the universe are so uniform in everywhere that we look or observe, at least. Like, it could have something to do with what space is, how space is generated, and how objects are expressed in space. And maybe finding out more about that process and the fundamental physics thereof will explain this reason. It's not like, in principle, science could never answer this question that Cameron's brought up. It's just that, again, this is a god of the gaps. Science doesn't have the answers for why the universe is so uniform right now. So therefore, Cameron's answers must be preferred for some reason that he'll never elucidate.
Yeah, I find this kind of happens with me a lot when I have my discussions online. I have to say to people, because it's hard to recognize that this is a God of the Gaps argument, because it doesn't look or sound like one. But what I counter with is, what do you think is more likely? An as of yet undiscovered naturalistic explanation or magic, miracles, or God did it, if I'm trying to be nice the way I say it. So yeah, I think your point is accurate.
Historically, the track record of those two positions for various phenomena, from like lightning to volcanoes, I mean, the track record's not so good for the supernatural explanations using gods. And it's pretty dang good for the naturalistic explanations. Over time, I think it's panned out pretty successfully in one way versus the other.
That's true. All right, moving on.
It doesn't answer this question. It doesn't answer it at all. Science assumes that the laws exist and it uses them as sort of like a foundation for what it does. But it doesn't explain, science does not explain why these laws exist or why they're so consistent throughout the entire universe. All right, back to my software. All right, so here's where my software comes to sort of map this out visually. All right, think of each hypothesis, perfect being theism, limited theism, LT, and atheism, A, as a big sheet of paper. All right, we're gonna assume that we're dealing with pieces of paper. All right, we're going back to elementary school. So each sheet represents the possibility space for that hypothesis. I've also got that represented in bars on the screen. Okay, so this pink area is atheism, the yellow area, limited theism, blue area, perfect being theism. The possibility space refers to everything that's possible if that hypothesis.
I like that he makes fun of himself. That's good.
But first, what we got to do is evaluate the likelihood of the evidence given the various hypotheses. Okay, so here's how the evidence affects the probabilities in this case. So under perfect being theism, that's our first probability we need to assign. Order actually makes a lot of sense. Okay, a perfect being would value rationality, consistency, and beauty.
I like how the perfect being has the same objectives that Cameron does, or that a person in general would. So you and I, as conscious beings existing in this universe, we desire to be able to answer questions about this universe. And a being, here's the hubris, something that is perfect would be just like me in that respect, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, Cameron's description is like his idea of a perfect human and what that perfect human would want. But I hear all the time, anytime I ever ask a Christian anything about God, they're always like, oh, we're like ants to God's mind. There's no way that we could know the mind of God, and God is so mysterious, we could never know his thoughts. And now all of a sudden, Cameron's telling me exactly the things that God values and thinks like and highly of. Like, which one is it?
Yeah, and this sort of that it, it's creating the gods in our image rather than what the Bible says, which is the opposite. Let us make man in our image. And it's hilarious how that cop-out is used for when you bring up issues. Like, it, the most oftentimes when I hear that, it's in response to some sort of like morally horrendous thing in the Bible, right? Like, well, we can't possibly know what God was thinking or what God has planned for the future. So any act could be like permissible or whatever. But when it comes to assigning, trying to figure out what kind of universe would be created by this thing, oh yeah, no, it actually makes perfect sense that God would intend and desire to make this type of universe. So I don't know. It seems
like, I'm just trying to square what Cameron just said about what God prefers. He said rationality, order, and beauty, right? It's like I'm trying to square that with the God that sent a global flood to wipe out like all life on Earth, all the beauty, for a completely irrational reason that a couple humans were messing up, and he kills all the animals, all the beautiful things. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Nothing that he just described matches the God of the Bible's characteristics.
Well, we will have to separate Christianity, the Christian lens specifically, because I mean, he claims to be arguing generic theism. So we'll have to take that position for what it's worth. But still, I mean, there are tons of criticisms.
The thing is, because he's got two positions, right? He's not just arguing generic theism. He has perfect being theism, and he has limited being theism. Mm-hmm. So I think like all the word perfect is bearing a lot of weight here. When he says perfect, like the word, everything that Cameron thinks about what the Christian God is all wrapped up and smuggled into this through that word perfect. Because Cameron would think perfect is an all good, all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful God, like literally just exactly the Christian God. That's what he defines as perfection. So he is talking about the Christian God. He's just not using those words because he's smuggling that God in with the word perfect.
It's also a huge problem that Cameron thinks that he knows what perfect is or would look like. So, I mean, we'll see that when he assigns the probabilities. We haven't even gotten that far yet, so...
All of which are reflected in universal laws. So order allows, for example, for a stable, predictable universe, a framework where life, creativity, and moral growth can flourish. So it's pretty plausible that a perfect being would actually create a universe with consistent order. So let's conservatively, though, let's be conservative here. We don't want to assign too much of a probability here. Let's assign something like 50%. Okay, it's 50% likely.
Is that really conservative?
Here's my take, right? A perfect being is perfect. Therefore, has no need to create anything, and especially has no need to create anything less perfect than themselves, which would overall increase the amount of imperfection in the universe and would be an imperfect act, which a perfect being is incapable of. So a perfect being should be incapable of any change over time or creation of anything else that's not perfect.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
my take. So that would mean that the probability is 0% and perfect being theism is eliminated right from the start.
Not theism, but perfect being theism. I don't really find a problem with that because, you have to make very odd concessions like this being, this deity or whatever, desires for certain things not to happen because this being, this deity there are taboos and sins and, you know, moral commandments of thou shalt not attached with it. We are kind of betraying what I said we would do or not do earlier and look at it from a Christian lens, but whatever. So, but if that being creates this universe, then that means that that being desired, willed for those kinds of things to happen, things that it doesn't desire. And yeah, that sounds completely imperfect. And I mean, I know what kind of the responses to try to deal with that are. But yeah, specifically for perfect being theism, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. You know what's kind of funny? I think that the God hypothesis is, in almost every application of it, is a total cop-out, you know? But what's kind of funny is I don't really, although I think that, I do take the God arguments seriously. So, or what I mean is I don't just dismiss them outright, which would be, which in turn would kind of be a cop-out. I can dismiss them as easily as I think people bring them up to be an explanation for something. But, you know, so for this thing that a perfect being couldn't create an imperfect universe, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I generally don't throw that type of argument back at the theist because I'm trying to be a little more, I guess I'm just trying to be a little more gracious. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I don't have, it's just, it's kind of funny how quickly you can dismiss these things and people think you're being unfair or dishonest, but I really think you aren't because the explanation just is so bad in the first place. And there are so many logical problems with it that it actually is pretty easy to throw it out. I'm too nice. That's what I'm saying. We all are, actually.
Yeah, like I've used this argument, this line of reasoning that a perfect being would have no desire to create anything. And I've used that against apologists, like theist apologists before, even like general theists, not Christians, that were just arguing for a perfect God. And they would say things like, oh, well, he would increase his perfection or be more perfect. And I'm like, well, there is no such thing as more perfect. You're either perfect or not perfect. If there's room for you to become more perfect, then you were never a perfect being to start with. And then they'll say stuff, oh, it's to celebrate his perfection. It's like any God that would desire imperfect beings to celebrate their perfection, that seems to me, again, because perfection is a subjective term to a certain degree. My perfect is different than yours is different than Cameron's perfect. To me, that's imperfection. And then the final thing that I hear is, oh, well, God created a universe with free will in it. And that's why the universe became imperfect and flawed, because it's fallen. That's the main one that I hear, especially from Christian apologists. And this one makes even less sense to me because, let me give you an analogy, right? If you told me that you knew a perfect chef who only makes perfect food, right? He's perfect at cooking. And I hire this chef to come and bake me a cake. And the chef bakes a cake, and as soon as he takes it out of the oven, it collapses and falls. And he says, oh, no, don't worry. I'm still a perfect chef. It's just that I added something to this recipe that later on caused the cake to fall and become imperfect. It's like, would you still call that person a perfect chef if they did that? Like, no. This is exactly analogous to a perfect God creating a universe with free will in it that, because it had free will in its design, in its origin, it eventually fell into imperfection. Well, yeah. Then that initial creation with that design flaw in it that would lead to an imperfect creation in the end is itself an imperfect act of creation, which a perfect being could not possibly do. A perfect being cannot do an imperfect act.
Yeah, and I'm sympathetic to the take that, well, he created beings with free will, and they are, like, morally responsible for what they do, but I think really not, because just imagine I build a bomb, and I know that the bomb is going to go off. Now, the bomb had no choice in detonating, and we can't indict a bomb, but I have the moral, even though the explosion killed them, I didn't really kill them, I guess, in a way. I knew exactly what was going to happen, and I set up the system in order that it would do that, and it was consistent with my intentions that it would do that. You know, sometimes people cause death, and they get off because of, I mean, they may just get a manslaughter case because it can be proven not to be premeditated, but everything that happens in accordance with this ultimate being's determination to create a universe that is like this. I have an analogy for a perfect creator can't do anything imperfect thing that I kind of like to use because I think it's simple. So imagine we have a perfect circle, and then there's like a pencil in the middle of it, and it rolls along a surface. So as long as that circle is perfect, the surface is flat, and that pencil's in the middle, the only thing it can do is draw a perfectly straight line, which I didn't do, but it's just an analogy. That's the claim anyways, right? So, but if we dissect that line that is being drawn and we see occasionally that it has bumps, then it can't be that that circle is perfect. That's the, or I guess the ground it's laying on can't be perfect. Those are the only possible explanations. You can't blame the pencil or anything like that, because the circle is ultimately responsible for what is happening. So that's my very simplified analogy. I've never told it before. You guys can tell me if you think it's stupid or not.
Point five, that a perfect being would create an orderly universe. In this case, what you're seeing is that half of perfect being theism's...
Again, where did that number come from?
...sheet is being cut. Okay, this lighter...
The perfect being has an infinite number of capabilities, but it either did or did not create this kind of universe.
...area here. Imagine that sheet, that part of perfect being theism's sheet, is being cut away, okay? So we're basically saying that at least half of the possibility space on perfect being theism contains order. Half of it contains disorder. That's what this 0.5 or 50% probability sort of represents. All right, let's move on to limited theism. So limited theism could also explain order, but here's the problem with limited theism. Creating a universe where every object follows the same laws everywhere and at all times is actually a really big deal. Like it seems kind of difficult. A limited deity might lack the power, they might lack the knowledge, or even the motivation to achieve such perfect consistency throughout the universe.
What I don't like about this limited theism thing, and I've never heard it explained to me in super great detail, but even if it's not capable of everything a perfect being is with an omni trilemma or whatever, it still has abilities that are far beyond even our comprehension. So, I mean, in a sense, it's almost like comparing different kinds of infinities. There are infinities that are like literally, in fact, bigger than others. And a limited being is just kind of like a smaller kind of infinity. So I don't really intuitively get the sense of how this universe seems like it would be difficult for a limited God to create. That doesn't actually do too well for me.
Limited is just defined as anything that's not perfect. So if it's not, you can have a God that is all powerful and all knowing and just not all good. But it could be an all powerful, all knowing God of the creation of universes. And it could just be a God that all they do is create universes all day long. And they just don't, they're not morally good. They're just morally neutral. And that's a limited God according to this definition. So there literally is, I mean, the way that he's boxed in himself in with these definitions means that it's just, there's so many options for limited theism that you can't possibly even put a probability on that.
Well, you know what else is, and I'm happy for somebody to tell me if this intuition is wrong, but wouldn't a limited deity be less complex, more parsimonious than a perfect one? So I feel like actually by default, it would be the more probable thing. And again, that plays into this because I see no reason to see what, like literally this isn't even a limited deity argument, but simulation theory would be that kind of thing. The universe could be a simulation. And I think, although that's really not quantifiable with a real number, I think we can say, well, we know we can make crude simulations. So it's almost like we do have an actual prior to pull for simulated universe versus universe created by magic, because we don't have priors for magic.
It all ultimately just exposes the fact that there's not an objective meaning to perfection.
Yeah.
Like if I said, well, I think that the most perfect thing is the most simple and parsimonious, then by definition, a perfect being would have to be perfectly simple and parsimonious. But if I said, oh, well, I think a perfection is when the most number of parts are working together in the greatest harmony, and that's perfection. So then the most complicated being becomes the most perfect as long as it's overall cohering to harmony. So it's like there is no objective standard for these terms. So this, again, all just comes back to how Cameron feels about his connotations with the word perfect and how likely he feels that entitles his worldview to be.
Yeah, like I said, the I like how the perfect being has the same objectives that people tend to.
So while order is definitely possible under limited theism, it's far less likely than it is under perfect being theism. So again, we're going to be conservative. Let's assign this a probability of 10%. So 0.1. And let's
that still seems absurdly too high.
See what happens. All right. So basically, in this case, most of limited theism's sheet is being cut away here. Okay, this is the removed portion of limited theism that we're seeing what happens when we add the evidence of order. This piece is being cut away, and this is all that's left down here of limited theism. All right, let's now turn to atheism. So under atheism, why would we expect every particle in the universe to behave in exactly the same way at all times and in all places? Why not just pure chaos? Some atheistic scenarios might even allow for order, but these are very rare exceptions. Most atheistic universes would look completely chaotic, with objects behaving unpredictably.
I don't get on what grounds he gets to make those claims. And there are what are called value selection atheistic stances. And these are things like a multiverse hypothesis, the anthropic principle, which kind of just basically tells us the reason things look the way they are and are intelligible is because otherwise they couldn't be. Nothing special. Self-selection, which is like this idea that
you could have stopped it at just, sorry, maybe there's a little bit of lag. I was saying you could have just stopped it right at multiverse. Like, I feel like that's not at all rare, or to attribute any rarity to a multiverse hypothesis just seems absurd. Like, he brings up the things that you had mentioned earlier, like the multiverse, and then just hand wave dismisses them by labeling them as rare without any justification.
Yeah, I mean, if multiverse is true, and it for all of our best attempts to take a look at the scope of the universe, it literally goes on forever. And in an infinite universe, anything that can happen does, which, again, sounds like this is where it's just so unfair, the way the bias selects. That sounds like the biggest cop-out ever, but it literally isn't as much of one compared to a being of infinite incomprehensibility. But anyways, if that's the case, then literally all the problems he's saying are problems are actually inevitable consequences of that universe. And so assign that 50%. That would be an appropriate number.
I was saying, so if we're totaling up how ours differ from his, because I got 0% for perfect. I don't know how to attribute the other one. And then we can just go with 50%. Because again, we're just making up numbers because Cameron's just making up numbers. Because who could ever accurately put numbers to this? How could you possibly know enough information about the universe to do that?
It's total arbitration. And I said that in his video, in one of the replies in my comments. I'll read it because it's a good point. The methodology is no different than someone doing, well, I don't know what God's intentions are, so I don't know if this is the kind of universe a God would make. So I'll assign it 1 out of 1,000. Meanwhile, if the universe was chaos, we couldn't exist. So this is the only kind of universe that can exist. So I'll assign it 50-50. I don't think that's not illogical. Now, I don't think it's necessarily all that fair, but if it's not, then neither is what he's doing, because it's no more or less arbitrary.
I find both of them highly illogical. I think anybody that's assigning probabilities to any of this stuff is just acting irrationally.
Well, maybe.
Following, and here's a key point here, they might be just following local, inconsistent rules, right? You don't have to have rules that are consistent throughout the universe. You could have local patches of order. So
why would a God that can do literally anything not create universes that, or not create a universe that, well, first of all, why would it not create multiple universes? And why would it not create a universe that has pockets of disorder and then special pockets of order?
Personally, I think that if the universe was such a way that the laws of physics were like local and were dynamic and could change under the influence of some sort of perfect being, I would think that that universe would be much more perfect, because like there are tons of tragedies and innocent deaths that occur specifically because the laws of physics were operating as normal in that situation. Like, think about how many babies have unfortunately met their end because of the strength of gravity in that moment. Like, if the laws of physics were different, I would think that especially under the helm of a perfect God, that the universe would actually be more morally perfect than it is now if so uniform in its physics. So again, I think that this the whole point of Cameron's entire first point acts against evidence for Cameron's God.
I think you're right. I think it would definitely, I really like what you said, because I think that would definitely be pretty devastating for perfect being theism, because exactly like you said, this perfect being created a universe with the laws of physics that cause an insane amount of pointless death, right? So why would a perfect being create, this is basically the problem of evil, but we're not talking about like, when I think of the problem of evil, I normally think of like humans are imperfect and do evil things. But the problem of evil goes to just the complete pointless suffering, like a drought happens and a million animals die for no good reason. That's also part of the problem of evil. And yeah, so I think that that would drastically lower the odds for perfect being theism. I like that. That actually makes perfect sense. Okay, I wanted to talk about this again too, because a universe created by a perfect being is uniformly conducive, it has order everywhere in it, and then this also goes to fine-tuning, is fine-tuned for life. That actually seems like the most unmiraculous thing. That it does not cry out for a deistic explanation, because like what would beg for an explanation is if the universe all around us was random chaos, except this tiny pocket where we eke out our living. That would be very, very bizarre under naturalism, but it's exactly the opposite of what we see. So I really don't see how that's favorable for theism.
That's true. If the laws of physics only worked on Earth, and life could, if life couldn't even exist, even venturing outside of the Earth, like if astronauts couldn't even go outside because they would just, bodies would decompose and the laws of physics break down, that would really make me question like how this whole thing was set up and really make me question naturalism. So you're right. I think that that's a much more likely theistic scenario than the universe we actually live in with uniform laws.
When we find aliens, Cameron will do his video where he says, well, under atheism, we would have never expected that there would be aliens out there. And instead, it's all theism. And I would say, no, exactly the opposite. All right, moving on. We'll try to let more of this play before we talk.
But let's be generous again and assign the probability of order under atheism at 1 in 1,000 or 0.1%. So let's go ahead and do that now. .001.
I'm being generous when I give it odds of only 1 in 1,000. Meanwhile, generic God that could be any kind of way, 50%.
God. Enter. So in this case, the evidence cuts almost all of atheism's sheet, leaving just a tiny little corner. And actually, we can zoom in here and we can see what's going on. Okay.
The thing I assigned very, very small probability almost disappeared.
Yep. So this is all that's left here. 0.00005% of the entire possibility space is left over. So when we plug these numbers into the software, here's basically what happens. Okay, perfect being theism sheet retains a significant portion of its space, growing in relative size to the others. Limited theism sheet shrinks, but it's still sort of in the running, all right? But then atheism sheet, just with one piece of evidence, is almost entirely cut away.
Why did he say evidence?
Well, didn't you just hear all the evidence that Cameron just gave us?
An argument isn't evidence. It's just, a hypothetical is not evidence. Assuming the mind of a deity is not evidence.
Leaving a fraction of its starting probability. So after normalization, that's what this last bar is on the graph here, normalized priors. That's where what's left over after we've cut away the different, you know, possibility space, the different sheets of paper, what's left over is then sort of stretched out. It's stretched out over, you know, a probability of one. I have done just one, included one piece of evidence. All right, perfect being theism is now sitting at 83%. Limited theism is now sitting at 16 or 17%. And atheism is like 0.3. Some atheists might argue that there are possible atheistic scenarios that predict order, like a multiverse or some kind of like self-organizing principle in nature. And that's totally fair enough. But here's my response to that. Just because there are scenarios that are possible under atheism, that doesn't make them likely under atheism. So
you say that, but it's possible that under theism, an intelligible, ordered universe would be created. But how does that make it likely? Again, the theism he's in favor of is a reflection of our bias. The deity that exists must be like us in some way.
Like, if you ask me personally, like, because again, this is all just personal confidence in our own expectations. I mean, that's all Cameron is doing. So if you were to ask me, you know, gun to my head, what's more likely under an atheistic world, a multiverse or just one universe? That the universe started just one time. No, I think that it would be much more likely that if a universe started one time in an atheistic scenario, right, then it would make the most sense that that process would happen multiple times. I mean, if we don't know of anything that would be preventing that. So it seems like the multiverse would be the most likely atheistic scenario, right?
I can't argue against that. No, I can't. All right, let's see what else we got.
So under atheism, these scenarios occupy only a tiny sliver of the overall possibility space. The vast majority of atheistic possibilities, on that sheet of paper predict disorder, are comprised of disorder and chaos, not the stunning universal regularity that we observe in this universe where the laws are universal, they're not local.
Let's see that sheet of paper. He says he's got a sheet of paper with all of the various possibility spaces for atheism. Let's see it, Cameron. Show us that list.
No, yeah, he doesn't have it.
Throughout the whole universe. So even if we grant that such scenarios are possible under atheism, where there are possible sort of possibilities under atheism where there is order, that doesn't change the fact that order is overwhelmingly improbable on atheism or given atheism or under atheism. That's why the numbers that we've assigned here, where atheism accounts for less than 1%, still holds up. And remember, this is just one piece of evidence. Okay, we haven't even gotten to like the big daddy, all right? Now let's see what happens when we add in the next piece of evidence. Let's move on to fine-tuning. First, what do we mean by fine-tuning? Well, it's the idea that the fundamental constants of nature, the numbers baked into the laws of physics, so even if you've got laws, if you've got universal regularity, these are the constants of nature, the numbers that are in there. And these numbers fall within an extraordinarily narrow range that makes life possible. So for example, gravity is strong enough to hold planets together, but it's not so strong that stars are going to collapse in on themselves, right? You've got the right number in that gravitational constant. The same goes for countless other constants like the cosmological constant, which governs the expansion of the universe. And here's what's important here, though. The numbers that we see in these constants, they didn't have to fall into life-permitting ranges. And in fact, they're so precise.
Yeah, no kidding.
He says that, but gives no reason why not. I mean, why didn't they have to fall? I mean, that's my entire... sorry to front run it, but my entire issue with fine tuning is that the possibility space for these various constants, like what values they could possibly take up, is just assumed without any reason to do so. You just assume, well, hey, if this constant could have any value between negative infinity and positive infinity, what are the odds that it just so happens to be this value? It's like, you don't know what its possible value range could be. You have no way of knowing that. So why just assume that it could be all of these different values?
Yeah, and then why assume that the deity creates this specific kind of universe? There are so many issues with fine-tuning that I did in a dedicated video, and I don't want to ramble about that forever here because, I could go on for 20 minutes, but it's not that serious. It's a compelling argument, but it just has so many weak points. We'll probably get into some of them here, but this is kind of weird because, you know, with the order, a lot of the arguments against it were brought up, the fine tuning and all the other like selective atheistic positions, arguments, takes.
That changing just one constant by even a fraction could render the entire universe lifeless.
I'd like to say why I think that is. Why all of his arguments for order are fundamentally all the same arguments for fine-tuning, even though they are slightly different, but ultimately it's both the same argument. Why is the universe the way that it is instead of some different way? Mm-hmm. It must be God. That's all Cameron is doing the whole video.
Yeah.
For all of these arguments. All three.
Yeah. And why, but it just begs the question, why would God choose to create this particular kind of universe?
Or like, how do you know that the universe could have possibly been different? You don't know that. Why, yeah. Why assume it? Do you have any reason to assume that it could be different?
Yep. Yep. And that's that goes into the multiverse, the bubble universes, and many, many, many other things.
Let's quantify this with an example. Dr. Luke Barnes, a cosmologist, has calculated that the odds of getting the right value for the cosmological constant are 1 in 10 to the 90th. 1 in 10 to the 90th. I don't know why I'm doing this. That's a decimal. Okay, if you don't know the math here, that's a decimal followed by 90 zeros.
No, it'd be 89 zeros. We both watched that response video to this, and he pointed out that Cameron gets the decimals wrong every he adds one extra decimal like every single time he does it. It's kind of funny. But yeah, I mean just a quick thing to say as an aside about this. I don't remember which constant it was, but I was listening to Sean Carroll discuss this, and he said, look, early on there were these estimates that the odds of the tolerance space for something, or the odds that it would be the way it is, I can't remember exactly how it was phrased, was said to be a number very close to what he just said. But then people actually did the rigorous calculations, and they found out that it was actually one. So like literally inevitable. Now I don't claim that that's what we're going to find for everything eventually. That would be silly to claim, but this argument from incredulity, therefore God of the gaps argument thing, is just, it assumes too much. It's not well-founded.
I like to bring up the example of Fermi's constant, which used to be thought of as a fundamental constant of nature that just had the value that it has, and nobody knew why it had that value. Until scientists discovered quantum mechanics, and then all of a sudden, hey, wait, Fermi's constant emerges out of the mathematics of quantum physics. And now we knew why it had the exact value that it had, because it wasn't a fundamental constant. We discovered more fundamental underlying physics that explained why that constant had that value at more macro levels. So, like, if we've already done that process before, and everybody is in agreement that we don't have a fundamental theory of physics, like for a unified theory of everything fundamentally, then like nobody, no apologist can possibly in good faith use the fine-tuning argument, because you don't actually know until you actually know the fundamental physics of our universe. You don't know which constants are actually fundamental and which ones are actually composite and have perfectly logical explanations for why they have that value. And we just don't know those explanations yet.
That's very well said. It's almost like a shifting of the burden of proof. Until you prove this otherwise, this is the default explanation or the best explanation.
Before you hit a one. To put that into perspective, that would be like basically randomly picking one specific atom out of the entire observable universe and somehow picking the right one. That's the probability that we're talking about here by chance. Okay, and according to Barnes, when you combine all of the known fine-tuned constants, the odds drop to... here it is. 1 in 10 to the 136.
I went to this paper and I looked at how he does that. And would it surprise you that at the start of each one of the constants, he goes, assume that it's uniformly likely that the constant is in this range of possibilities and it could be any of those values. Then what are the odds that it is this value? It's like, well, why would I bother assuming that? It's like every one of his argument is, given this assumption that is unjustifiable, then here's the probability of fine-tuning. It's like, okay, well, I'm just not going to assume an unjustifiable assumption then.
These sorts of numbers are so small, it's almost impossible to imagine. All right, let's go ahead and add fine-tuning as another piece of evidence. So let's add it here. We'll write it in, fine-tuning. All right, so now we're ready to evaluate under our different hypotheses. So first of all,
I don't remember what he gives it. Is it, if it's 0.5, I'm going to lose my shit though.
All perfect being theism. A perfect being wouldn't necessarily have to create a life-permitting orderly universe. He could create something else, like an orderly realm filled with angels. But it's pretty plausible that a perfect being might value a universe capable of sustaining life as a sort of consequence of his laws, maybe as a reflection of his creativity and his goodness. But let's be, again, conservative and assign this a relatively low probability of 1 in 1,000, or again, 1%. And so in this case, most of perfect being theism's sheet is being cut away, 0.001.
Yeah.
And you, of course, know why he's doing this, right? Because he has already gone through all these probabilities and he knows the conclusion. He knows how he wants to conclude these. He knows what the final probabilities need to be for that conclusion. So then he's figured, well, what is the lowest possible probability that I could give my God in each of these and still get the outcome that I want? So that's when he says, well, let's just be conservative and make it 1 out of 1,000, because he knows that he can go that low and still get the outcome he wants to get in the end.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I would not think that he's doing this blindly, just going off of intuitive answers and then being like, well, let's see what comes out of this thing. I'm guessing that there were some practice rounds with this. But again, he did assign it a low probability, but we might have to do this in two videos, but if we get to the point where, I mean, he's, like I said earlier, he starts assigning odds of like 1 in a trillion under naturalism for certain things. And again, a perfect being could literally do anything. And like I was saying earlier, if this, again, this is a little bit more through a Christian lens, but if the ultimate truth was supposed to be revealed here on Earth, but the entire universe is conducive to life, then that is just so... That's not 1 in 1,000 for perfect being theism.
See, here's the thing, is that the entire universe isn't conducive for life. If the universe was entirely conducive for life, and I could go to anywhere in the universe and live a happy, fulfilled life, maybe I would conclude, wow, the universe sure does seem to be fine-tuned for life.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. In the actual universe, my ability to live in the world is like basically like if you had an entire galaxy filled with salt, nothing but salt, and one single grain of sugar in all of that salt. And then you say, wow, it sure does look like this is fine-tuned for sugar. It's like, dude, the amount of the universe that is inhospitable to life compared to the amount of universe that is like probably actually worse than that one grain of salt in a galaxy, or one grain of sugar in a galaxy full of salt.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I meant was, my understanding is the laws of physics that are permissible for life do exist everywhere. Not that the material conditions are like that. But again, even though what you just said is true, and now it sounds like you're arguing for perfect theism, looks like you're getting converted here. You're getting reconstructed instead of deconstructed.
No, I'm saying that the universe is not finely tuned for life. Like, you would never conclude that that galaxy is finely tuned for sugar if it contains one grain of sugar and 60 quintillion billion grains of salt. Like, it's the same for the universe. Like, I would never conclude that our universe is fine tuned for life, because the vast, vast majority of it is utterly inhospitable to life.
I think that's a different perspective on it. That's valid, but I don't think that's normally what people mean. I think people just mean the laws of physics make life permissible. But the other thing is, finishing my thought from a little bit ago, it almost sounds like we're increasing the odds for theism. But again, in an infinite universe, there would be an infinite amount of life, even if the vast majority of the space within that universe can't contain any life because the material conditions aren't good enough.
Let me try this one more time and see if you get there with me, okay? Because what is the more finely tuned universe, right? For life, universe A or universe B, right? Universe A is our universe, and universe B is a universe where every single area in the universe is hospitable for life and we can live there fine. So which universe is more finely tuned for life with those options? Universe B, right?
I mean,
if you have a perfect being who perfectly cares about the stuff that Cameron was talking about, then they should perfectly fine-tune the universe. So if everyone should be able to agree that universe B is more perfectly fine-tuned for life than universe A, so then universe B should be our universe if there's a perfect God. And since we have universe A, then we know that we don't have perfect being theism.
Well, he did assign perfect being theism low. So what is it under limited theism? Let's find out.
Next, limited theism. So a limited deity might lack the power to fine-tune a universe to this degree. All right, he just might not have enough power. Or he might have it.
Again, that doesn't sound like the kind of thing that a deity, even a limited one, wouldn't be able to accomplish. Because again, go back to simulation theory. Sufficiently advanced technological civilization could do it, and they're nowhere approaching the level of what an actual deity is, right? Because they are beholden to the laws of nature, and a deity is not. So I just, this idea that a limited being is so much more unlikely to do it than a perfect one really just doesn't sit well with me at all.
I mean, the odds that a limited God that is all-powerful but not all-knowing and not all-good but is an all-powerful God of life, the odds that that God would create a universe fine-tuned for life are essentially 100%. So it depends on which limited God we're talking about.
I guess.
He might have that power and just not value it as much as an even greater genius might value it. It's far less likely that a being...
Again, the perfect being values the kinds of things that Cameron values. The hubris.
Here, I want to do an alternate one, right? Instead of just perfect being theism and limited theism, I want to do perfect being theism compared to a limited God who is all-powerful and is the God of order, life, and consciousness. And I want to see how that affects these probabilities, and I want to see if my God of order, life, and consciousness is more probable, according to Cameron's model, than Cameron's God, and maybe we can convert him.
That'd be interesting. All right.
Being with limited abilities could or would produce a life-permitting universe, but still it's not fantastically implausible. We're limited beings, and we fine-tune things all the time when we have a chance. So let's set this probability at 1 in 1 million. All right, we're going to go with a relatively low number here. So 1 in 1 million. Let's type that in. 0.000001.
That's too many zeros.
So atheism is looking pretty good here. And we start talking about how likely fine-tuning is on atheism. All right, so here's where things get ridiculous. All right, on atheism, there is no guiding intelligence. It's all pure dumb luck. All right. The odds.
It's not dumb luck, and you don't need guiding intelligence. The laws of physics operate according to, you know, what they are. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair. Like when I just talk out loud, I screw things up. I'm getting grilled today on YouTube because I said mass when I meant weight in a video I put out today, and people are not letting me get. People are not giving me any grace for that. It's pretty funny. So
odds of hitting a life-permitting universe by chance are astronomical. We've already talked about it, but let's be very generous to the atheists. There's a point why I'm doing this, actually, because it's going to break my software if I actually put in the right numbers. But let's be generous and say that it's 1 in a trillion or 1 in 10 to the 12th power. All right. So even though that's wildly optimistic compared to the real number that Luke Barnes has calculated, let's go ahead and plug that in here.
So just...
With generosity like this, who even needs cruelty?
Wow, that's a new phrase. Never heard that before. So, again, just completely not even trying to take those, what are they called? The value selection atheistic hypotheses.
Let's now add one more crucial clue to the mix. Before we get to the problem of evil, let's turn now to consciousness. So for clarity, when I say consciousness, I'm specifically talking about conscious creatures, created beings that have mental states, beings like us who can think and feel and reflect on the world around us. Here's the question, though. Given the orderly and fine-tuned universe we've already established as background knowledge, how likely is it that conscious creatures would exist under each of our three hypotheses? Let's go back to my software and add in our third piece of evidence.
I mean, if natural selection... occurs, like I can sympathize. Well, I mean, it would be literally true that even if the universe is finely tuned for life, whether or not theism or atheism is true, if there's a universe finely tuned with life and there's life ubiquitous in that universe, life like us is more rare than, you know, more simple forms of life. But if evolution by natural selection occurs, and whatever kind of life exists anywhere else in the universe, it's almost certainly going to be subjected to natural selection. I mean, we see natural selection with non-living chemical systems. So if that's going to happen, then it's basically inevitable that life forms become more complex as they exploit new niches. And there are some, like the idea of what, we don't know what consciousness is precisely, but I've listened to very smart people talk about it, and a lot of them seem to think it simply is something that a sufficiently complex computing system possesses or ends up doing or having. It emerges from it, which is why I don't see any like philosophical issue from the idea that AI will one day be conscious from those types of perspectives. So again,
I was going to say, I have a slightly different take than that. I do think that consciousness is something specific that needs to, like, if an AI, I also think that there's nothing in principle, like, preventing an AI from being conscious or from replicating a conscious experience with a machine. But I think that it's specifically, you have to go in with that in mind. Like, you wouldn't just, like, make it complex enough and then consciousness emerges out of that. I mean, I could be wrong, like you said. I mean, there is not, like, a... you know, theory of mind out there that we know exactly what, how consciousness emerges from molecules. But that's my overall intuition, is that it would have to be something programmed specifically. But I also say that consciousness has plenty of evolutionary advantages. That would mean that if you had multicellular organisms, consciousness would eventually be selected for. I do think that the biggest, most improbable step in the origin of life, because I think Cameron explicitly said that he's granting the first two propositions for this third one. So that means granted a universe with order, granted a universe that is finely tuned for life, then what are the odds of consciousness arising under atheism? And I'd say, like, if the universe is finely tuned for life, right, we would expect life on lots of different planets in that universe, and you'd find a lot of different planets that just had, you know, single cell type life, microscopic life. But, you know, it happened on Earth. I don't see any reason that would prevent it. I mean, there are selective pressures that do favor multicellularity. Like, predation is one. If you just clump together and get bigger and bigger and more integrated, you can be more better protected from predators in your environment. So there are evolutionary advantages both to becoming multicellular and to becoming conscious. I mean, if you think about a philosophical zombie, right? Somebody that has all the same behaviors that we do, but doesn't have consciousness, as compared with a human, and how their brains would be different. I would contend that our brains would be much, much, like, by a factor of many thousands more energy efficient than somebody that had all of our behaviors but no consciousness. Because for that person, every single one of those behaviors would have to be pre-programmed into their brain so that they have stimulus, and then they already have a pre-programmed behavior to react to that stimulus. And think about all the different variety of dynamic, unique stimuli that you encounter in your environment. If you have consciousness and a pre-programmed in sense of self-preservation, then all of a sudden you can encounter all of these various scenarios, ones that you've never encountered or never prepared to encounter before, and you can act accordingly because you have consciousness and a sense of self-preservation. So that means that you can have all these kinds of behaviors that are not pre-programmed. And that's a huge advantage of consciousness that a non-conscious entity wouldn't have.
Yeah, I don't know what Cameron even means by conscious.
Subjective experience.
Well, because, like, I don't know if Cameron's like naive and doesn't think that, for example, like my cat is conscious, you know.
Cameron thinks that animals have Christian souls and goes to heaven.
Really?
Yes. Like, he made a video specifically making fun of Alex O'Connor for raising the question of animal suffering, because he's like, yeah, well, animals go to heaven, so any of their suffering is counteracted or whatever. Like, he's got a very strange take on this that he seems to think is a popular take among Christians, but I've never heard any other Christians talking like he does. So
typically, like, I don't know where his conscious argument's going to go, so we'll let it play out and see. But if it's sort of, you wouldn't expect beings like us to exist under natural. Okay, if that's it, well, then again, that's just theism explains it, because this the deity reflects the desires that I have. Whereas, like under naturalism, we could have all kinds of life. We wouldn't have life of a like perhaps. Perhaps the only way we can have beings like us that question their own existence and where they come from is because there's a creator that designed us to be able to ask those kinds of questions, whereas everything else is just, you know, animals like Kitty Cat Peterson here. Sure, but that doesn't, to me, that doesn't do a good job for just the question of consciousness existing in general. That doesn't cry out for a theistic explanation. But anyways, we're gonna let Cameron do the talking.
This one is, again, consciousness. We'll type it out really quickly. All right, so starting with perfect being theism, if a perfect being exists, it wouldn't be too surprising to find that this being has created conscious creatures. Why? Well, first of all, a perfect being would recognize the intrinsic value of consciousness. Consciousness is pretty...
But why would... I said I was gonna let him talk, and now I have to interrupt. And this is parallel to a fine-tuning argument. Why on earth does the perfect being desire this? Because again, like those finely tuned constants, they're not specific to life. They're specific to everything. There could be a black hole deity that desired black holes to exist. And the existence of human beings is a completely irrelevant, pointless thing. It's just a distraction to the real question, which is why do black holes exist? You know? And this thing,
treating it as if it's like just a given that, well, of course, consciousness is intrinsically valuable, and thus a perfect being would obviously recognize that. And he just like saying it so casually as if everybody listening would just, of course, agree with that statement. That is like a completely baseless claim.
Have you ever, like, for example, have you ever, like, what I'm going to do is insert yours and my biases into this just to demonstrate the point. How often do you get a sense of awe and wonder or emotion? Like, how often do you get emotionally overwhelmed by nature versus poetry, books, things like that, things that are produced by conscious agents?
Oh man. Okay, I'm not the right person to ask this because I'm literally in awe of both of those things every week, like all the time. So I appreciate writing, literature, works of art, self-expression, as well as nature immensely and deeply. So both. I would have to say both.
Okay, well, maybe the reason I asked that question is because of how like autistic I am, perhaps. But for me, and I actually think, I don't know, I'm trying to be objective here, but I think people get people's intrinsic sense of beauty and what they want to preserve about the world is the natural beautiness of it, the patterns of constellations in the sky. There's nothing conscious going on up there. The way the leaves change in the fall, there's nothing conscious going on there. And so a perfect, like if you were going to build or create something beautiful, wouldn't you like shape the land, landscape it in some sort of way to make it beautiful, rather than just have it be full of a bunch of people to talk to? You know, now you do have to have music and art, and that is conscious expression. So maybe I am being stupid here, but
what I'm hearing is that the existence of Ohio debunks a perfect being God.
Yeah, like Detroit, Ohio. Just, you know, none of that makes any sense if God exists. Yeah, but I what I said probably is stupid, but because of the way I front loaded it, let's plug in our own biases into this and assert what makes more sense.
Pretty valuable. Consciousness enables rational thought. It enables love, creativity, moral understanding, and good, deep relationships, all of which align with a perfect creator's values. Since we've already established an orderly, fine-tuned universe in our background knowledge, the existence of conscious creatures fits really naturally, actually, on a perfect being hypothesis. But let's conservatively assign this a probability of 50%.
So 50%. So yeah, the God could desire literally anything, but it happens to super duper desire this one particular thing. Again, a god that just values natural beauty is not, there's nothing wrong with that assumption being more probable.
Yeah, like Cameron is literally saying that out of the total possibility space for all of the possible ways that a perfect being could have created the universe, he's saying that in 50% of those possibilities, there's conscious life. I mean, okay, doubt?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way. I hadn't really come up with a way of thinking about what these odds actually express, but yeah, in like countless number of possible deities, but half of them have this one thing in common. Yeah, that's a really good, I wish you'd have said that earlier instead of like an hour and 15 minutes into it, but that's a great way of intuitively thinking about how absurd the 50% number is.
Yeah, even just the, in principle, attributing probability to a perfect being, like, assumedly, there's only one perfect option for all of these. So these cannot be probabilities. A perfect being has a 100% chance of doing the only perfect action. There's only one. Like, there's not multiple perfect actions, right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like there probably can't be multiple perfect beings either. There can only be one perfect being. So there's only one way that that actually occurs. Yeah. And the only way you arrive at that one perfect being likely in any sense is to do that stupid philosophical argument where you say, well, if a perfect being necessarily exists, existing is better than not existing, so therefore it must exist. But yeah. I mean, that's not what Cameron's doing here, but it has the odor of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Five. See what happens. Let's turn now to limited theism. All right, so under limited theism, a conscious deity might also value creating conscious creatures. After all, relationships with other conscious beings are highly meaningful, and even we as limited beings create conscious creatures all the time when we have, you know, humans create families and stuff. But consciousness is also incredibly complex and difficult to explain. If you've ever thought about it for any amount of time, a limited deity might lack the power or understanding to create consciousness even in an orderly fine-tuned universe. While many conceivable limited beings could potentially create consciousness, the challenge of consciousness makes this significantly less likely than under perfect being theism. So let's assign this a probability of just 1% or 0.01. Consciousness is wildly, wildly unexpected. I can't sugarcoat this at all. In a universe that's already orderly and fine-tuned, life itself is still a staggering rarity. Okay,
when I heard that, I could not believe that he said that. Even in a universe that is finely tuned
for life
is absurdly improbable, or whatever he said.
Astonishing rarity.
Yeah, astonishing. No, it's exactly what you would expect to find. It would be ubiquitous everywhere. Now, again, it may be that...
You know what would be an actually astonishing rarity? If we had a universe fine-tuned for life where we couldn't find any life.
Yeah, where we couldn't find any. And which is, I mean, I wouldn't really say that we've really looked. It depends on how you view the Fermi paradox or whatever, but no, we haven't seen it anywhere other than here. So it's like, what does that count in favor more for, naturalism or theism? One of the flavors of theism. But yeah, I would say
that is about a 50% for naturalism. If I'd have to put another,
I would hope if Cameron heard him say what he just said there, that he would be like, oh yeah, no, but that was a little bit of a goof, because that was really bad.
Odds of randomly assembling the right conditions for even the simplest forms of life are astronomically low. But even if life somehow emerges on atheism, this leap to consciousness is an entirely different level of improbability. Consciousness introduces something radically new, subjective experience. Unlike physical properties like mass or charge, which are publicly accessible and measurable, consciousness gives its subject privileged access to mental states. So, for example, only you know that you're in pain. Your awareness of it is fundamentally different from any external observation. This like sudden emergence of a property so unlike everything else in a physical universe is deeply puzzling under atheism. Why would blind, unguided processes produce beings capable of self-awareness?
Because it's survivably, how do I want to say this? It's selectively advantageous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's evolutionarily advantageous
for
beings to be self-aware, because then you can have things like self-preservation drives.
Yeah, this that's such a bad argument.
This is Cameron saying, I'm not aware of any reasons why consciousness would evolve. Therefore, there aren't any.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like literally a God of the Gaps that he's also doing, where he said that there's a certain privacy that you have for your own subjective experiences, and nobody else can verify whether or not you're in pain. No, that's not true. There are neural correlates to consciousness. And like, yeah, we might not have technological abilities to like see each and every one of your thoughts, but like right now, like they can literally look at your brain while you're sleeping and like decode what you're dreaming about. And they can absolutely, for something as trivial as whether or not you're experiencing pain right now, you can absolutely see that in the brain. Like, you can see if somebody's experiencing pain or not experiencing pain. Like, there are neural correlates to all these things. Like, this privacy that he's talking about is like a philosophical assumption. Like, I mean, lots of philosophers like Daniel Dennett and others have disagreed with this assumption. And it seems like as neuroscience continues to advance, that the so-called privacy of subjective experience is becoming more and more illusory as technology can show us, well, actually, we can decode the neural activity and we can see what kind of experience this person is having.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. A person that is experiencing some kind of psychosis where their brain is producing an image or a concept or an irrational fear of the world that isn't true, that isn't really there, then that's what we call maladaptive. That's like a psychology term for something that's like not healthy for you or whatever. So clearly a concise and reliable and predictable and accurate mental model of yourself and the world around you is evolutionarily advantageous. And so this that it's not likely under naturalism thing is so, and I thought that is he implying that consciousness is less likely than fine-tuning?
Rational thought and moral understanding. In a godless universe, consciousness isn't just a fluke. It's a fluke of a fluke, layered on top of the already improbable emergence of life. Even being generous, the probability of consciousness arising under atheism is vanishingly small. But let's set it at 1 in 1,000,000. All right, let's be generous here. So 0.00.
Okay, well, so there's our answer. It's not less probable than fine-tuning, because that was 1 in 1,000,000,000.
0.00000.
So yeah, the first one, he was generous for 1 in 1,000. Then he was generous for 1 in 1,000,000,000. And now finally he's being generous with 1 in 1,000,000.
He's okay. So nice to atheism. I regret making this video, because we've just been so mean to theism, and he's been so incredibly generous. I think we've been pretty good sports, I think.
So after we plug these numbers into the software, perfect being theism retains a significant portion, limited theism loses most of its space again. But after, let's just look at the probabilities, okay? So again, it's sort of rounding up.
Skipping this part, where's our timestamp? Hour 37.
Now we're on to the problem of evil, the final lap.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that stuff.
Our fourth piece of evidence, evil. Go ahead and scroll down here, type in evil. There we go. All right, we're ready to assign our value, our first value. So let's start with perfect being theism. If God exists,
why? Well, shit. Maybe I want to listen to what he says about it, though.
Is there so much evil and suffering? Okay. Problem of evil. The argument basically goes like this. Now let's tackle atheism's best argument, the problem of evil. The argument basically goes like this. If a perfect God exists, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? Some atheists claim that this is like a knockout punch, the ultimate defeater for belief in God. But here's the thing. It's not as strong as it seems on the surface, and I'm about to show you why. All right,
if you assume the intentions of the deity, then yeah, it's not that strong.
Ready to add our fourth piece.
If I just assume that the probability is 50%, then the argument isn't that strong at all.
The evidence, evil. Let's go ahead and scroll down here, type in evil. There we go. All right, we're ready to assign our value, our first value. So let's start with perfect being theism. If God exists, why would he allow evil? One answer that I find really plausible is what philosophers call the soul-building theodicy. The idea here is that challenges, suffering, and even tragedy can serve a purpose. They shape us into better, stronger, and more virtuous beings. Think of it like going to the gym, right? There's no pain, no gain. Moreover, there are a lot of great goods that can't exist without evil. Courage, self-sacrificial love, and the like. A good being might judge that those greater goods...
Ugh. I just want to point out that an all-powerful God could achieve all of those outcomes without the evil and suffering.
Exactly.
By like, definition.
He's talking about this kind of thing where it's like, well, a vaccine hurts, but it saves lives, you know? But that's not analogous to the world we live in. We live in a world of objectively pointless suffering that occurs constantly. And I just, that's the kind of thing where it just doesn't make, that just doesn't make any sense.
I would say needless might be a better word than pointless, because sometimes Christians will say, well, God has a point for all that suffering, but we just don't know about it because he works in mysterious ways and we can't understand his mind or whatever. And so sometimes they'll say there's a point to it. Then I'll just say needless, because an all-powerful God would not need
right.
to do any of that. Like, he can make the same outcomes with preserving free will, because he can do literally anything by definition.
Yes.
So this is why it's so problematic to have a God who is Cameron's perfect God, because it's just the internal inconsistencies just disappear him in a bubble of
confidence. As long as he makes the limited being theism more probable, then at least he's being consistent. But yeah, exactly what you were alluding to. I say this with people I'm talking to, you know, they say, well, so like you bring up problem of evil or whatever. So it's like, oh, so you just want cheap grace. You just want, it's like they argue like this, the exact same way that people argue against welfare argue. It's actually kind of funny. Like, so you just want everything to be all perfect and nice and whatever, whatever. It's like, no, look, you can have a world of sin, because like lying is a sin, adultery is a sin, but a world of child cancer and pointless murders and things like that, we can have a world without those types of things. But that's not the world that we live in, and I cannot fathom how a perfect being would construct that. But let's let it roll here.
Should exist to at least a degree, but then he needs to permit evil. There's also been some really intelligent extensions of this theodicy to cover animal suffering. Now, does this mean that evil is sort of guaranteed under perfect being theism if we have...
Wow. This is a little bit of a tangent, but he just said there's been some intelligent dialogue about like animal suffering or whatever. He did this panel video with David Wood and this guy named Than, who I've talked to before, Exploring Reality, I think that's his name. He called it an embarrassing performance by Alex. And I can't remember, they either completely glossed over the animal suffering point, which was the best point that those two brought up, because you have billions of years, well, hundreds of millions of years of it before the supposed fall of the garden or whatever. And I can't remember if they either just poo-pooed it away or didn't even cover it. And it's like, on the one hand, say these guys had an embarrassing performance, and on the other hand, you say, oh, well, you know, there's actually some pretty good critiques that involve this. That video I'm talking about, his own supporters, there are all of the top voted comments are them saying, Alex's debate was far from embarrassing, so on and so forth. He wrote a comment to just gaslight all of them and say that they're wrong and pinned it to the top. Actually, here, I'll pull it up.
That's wild.
It was. I can't believe he did that. So many atheists in the comments raging about the title. But who among you watched the video? The title was discussed and defended at length. If you have a problem, fine. But interact with the points that were actually made. I mean, that's the pinned comment. The top comment, as a Christian, so no, not atheists. As a Christian, I'm a Christian. They lost the debate fair and square. No need to cope. That's the third most upvoted. As a Christian, to suggest that it was Alex that looked bad is absolute absurdity. I'm a Christian, but I was truly embarrassed by both Cliff and Stuart. The fact that they gaslit them like that by pinning that comment in there is just so... I don't know what the hell you call that. That's not a smart business decision right there.
Well, no, that is the whole thing, is that by like Cameron is not smart at managing his channel by himself.
I guess.
have a theodicy like this? I don't necessarily think so, but it's also not wildly unexpected either. So let's assign the likelihood of observing evil under perfect being theism a conservative 10% or 0.1. As you can see here, a lot of the possibility space is...
So, of all the possible imaginable perfect beings, 10% of them would allow perfect suffering? That was his...
Yep.
Because... They're not even suffering. Because why?
10%. 10% of all of the perfect, all good, all powerful, all loving gods, 10% of the time would allow for a world with evil in it.
If he would have done 1,000, I would have said, I'd put it lower, but okay. But 10%.
Okay, wait. He will address your objections. Have faith in Cameron here. I'm telling you, he will make it right for you later.
Okay.
Being cut away on theism here. All right, so what about limited theism? A limited deity might not have the power to prevent evil, or they might just not care enough to try, or he might, like lots of people, be on the whole very good, but sometimes fall short. Or maybe he just can't see the future, so he can't stop all the evil. There's a lot of possibilities here. Evil under this hypothesis is therefore plausible, but it's not guaranteed, so let's set this probability at 50%, 0.5. Now,
that's, I mean... The 0.1% for the 10%, so 0.1 for the limited, again, I'd have been kind of okay with that. But 50 is just, that seems so ridiculously high.
I don't know. I feel like a limited god scenario, I think 50 might be low for me. I would think that in a scenario where you have some god or amount of gods and they are limited in their power, what are the probability that evil exists in the world? I would say that's pretty likely at that point.
Well, maybe I'm thinking of the kind of suffering that we have versus, you know, what you could call like evil or sin, but of a lesser magnitude existing. So I don't know. Let's try to wrap this up.
For atheism, some might think that evil is sort of like a given under atheism. After all, why wouldn't there be suffering in a godless universe with conscious creatures? But let's again be generous to the atheist and set this probability at 1 or 100%. We'll just...
Nice.
Assume
this that... This is the only time he's actually been generous.
Yeah, I'm being generous here.
Atheism is true. Evil and suffering is an absolute given. When we plug these numbers...
I would have been... You know what would have been so funny? Just an epic troll on his point. Our part would be to be like... Well, under atheism, there's no such thing as morality, so we'll assign it 1 in a trillion or something like that.
Let's be generous here and make it 1 in a billion.
Here's these probabilities into the software. Here's what happens, all right? Perfect being theism, still overwhelmingly dominant. Limited theism, still pretty tiny. Atheism, still barely clinging to relevance. Like, you literally need scientific notation to even understand how improbable atheism is. But let's raise the stakes. Let's grant the atheist their best case scenario. Let's say the problem of evil is so powerful that the probability of observing evil under perfect being theism drops to 1 in 100,000. So we'll adjust this number.
Fine tuning was 1 in a trillion. And this is only 1 in 1,000. And was consciousness 1 in 1,000,000 or 1,000?
Keep watching. I think he does put it to 1 in a trillion here.
0.000001. All right, so what happens in this scenario? As you can see, in this unlikely scenario, the odds now slightly favor perfect being theism over limited theism. So we've got a final probability of perfect being theism is about 83%, limited theism about 16%, and then atheism is, again, virtually non-existent. But maybe you're not convinced. Maybe you think the problem of evil has way more force than even that. So let's get super dumb, and let's assign the probability of 1 in a trillion.
Oh, so now it's dumb to assign those kinds of odds.
Just to see what happens. 0.000000000001. So as you can see, in this scenario, all we've done is basically rule out perfect being theism and atheism. So look what happened to limited theism. The software is now rounding up to 1 or 100%, pretty much. In other words, theism still wins by a long shot. So here's the point of all this. The problem of evil isn't the theism-destroying argument it's often made out to be. At most, it might challenge the idea of a perfect god, but it doesn't make atheism more plausible or more probable.
He didn't consider the problem of evil in a vacuum. He said he took that. Okay, that was pretty incredibly bad. He already multiplied the odds of atheism to two dozen or whatever it was decimal places, and then said this makes the problem of evil not even a problem. Like you gave yourself a head start of freaking light years and then said, oh, I won the race.
Well, like, so he listed three arguments that he listed as being very probable in support of theism, and then one argument against it. So, like, what if you presented two more arguments against theism? Like, in addition to the problem of evil, maybe we would have, like, divine hiddenness, or some, like, we keep adding the ones against, and then let's see what happens with the odds, right? He definitely only wants to multiply three probabilities by one probability, you know? He doesn't want to do three and three, or he doesn't want to do, like, let's look at all the arguments for and against, a total laundry list, and then put them all into his little magical program that is totally real and definitely necessary. And yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty obvious what would happen if we did all of that with real probabilities. It unfortunately wouldn't get the outcome that Cameron wants.
You know, to close out here, here's what I want to do. I don't know his channel well. This only has 16,000 views in 3 days. For a channel with that many subscribers, I mean, I'm pulling numbers really close to that. I mean, that's kind of my average over the last several weeks. So that's kind of surprising. But I want to know what the top viewers are saying. So we can all agree that this methodology is closer to astrology than philosophy, right? That's not good. I'm a devoted Catholic. I firmly believe in God, but this will not convince anyone. He's just picking numbers he feels represent odds for different things. The fact that he didn't once pause and point out that legit everything about this was completely subjective. Oh, man, this is not going well for him.
They're roasting him in these comments.
Title could also be Believer Tweaks Probabilities to Prove What He Already Believes.
That's brilliant.
I took a glance at that. Somebody wrote a thesis statement in this. So I should have read this before our discussion, and then all of my thoughts would have been a lot more concise. What utter nonsense. This is a misapplication of Bayes' theorem.
Challenge mode. Can you find one comment that's supportive and positive? Or...
I typed amen and got zero results. And usually, well, let me load more. Usually, okay, so amen. Nope, the one result it was the word fundamental. So how about atheists?
Those my comment too.
Oh, that is yours.
I just called them out. I got the amen.
Oh man. So atheists. One argument I heard from atheists. No, I look for atheists because when I see content like this put out by apologists, usually people that just don't think for themselves ever are just like, oh, the atheists are going to come in here saying blah, 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 or you owned them. But no, I'm not seeing that. I have to assume that Cameron is actually just an atheist trolling at this point. He replied to it. Now that you've got that out of your system, what's your reply to the actual things I argue in the video? Okay, there we go. Well, we got through it. Thanks, Grayson. Anything you want to say in closing?
Just check out my channel if you enjoy debunking content like this. I do have my own takes on this video on the channel I just uploaded, and I just uploaded a debate, quote unquote, that I had with Nathan Oakley, the famous toxic and just terrible flat earther. So check that one out. It was basically more of like a debate of me versus the mute button.
That's every single thing he's ever put out. That's what it is. So not surprising.
Yeah, if you disagree with him, he will stop you mid-sentence, shout insults over you, and then mute you. But at least it was pretty hilarious and entertaining. I will say that much.
Well, that's good. I'll see everyone tomorrow.